Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Tommy, I've been wondering about something.
Yeah, what you got?
What's it like to own and drive a free car?
Well, free is a bit of a stretch, but yeah, in today's podcast, we're talking about a bunch of things, including the viral free car that I leased and what it's been like to live with and what it was like to actually go through that purchasing process, because it's not as easy as you might think.
All right, and before we do that, was Santa good to you? What did Santa bring?
Yeah, it was a great year. You actually got me a very, very nice gift,
thank
which
you.
I'm really appreciative of. This is a new watch. I'm slowly getting into the watch world, but this is the Swatch Blancpain collaboration. They're doing a bunch of these Blancpain-style watches
Is that how you say it in French? Blancpain?
Yeah, or blank pain, I guess, if you're American. But these are relatively affordable watches that are themed after oceans. This is the Ocean Storm version. I have the Indian Ocean as well, which I got last year, and I really like these. They're waterproof. They've got the little dive bezels, which are cool. They're full automatic movement. So really a fun way to kind of get into the watch world, watch people are really into it, and they don't cost that much money.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get into the free car thing, because I think that story went viral. And it's, you know, kind of ironic. I always feel like we never get the credit for a lot of stuff that we do that is new and original. But we basically broke that story. And I'll tell you how we broke that story and how you end up getting a free car, essentially. But first, before we do that, I'm just going to do a very quick recap of what happened so that people know how we got to getting a free car. About 3 months ago, we leased a Nissan Leaf for $9 a month, which was great. And then the entire payment, I think, came out to like $1,500 over the course of the two-year lease that gives you 10,000 miles a year. Actually, it was a 27-month lease. Then, because we did that, Case, who works here, started looking around for another great lease deal. And the reason we get great lease deals in Colorado is because we have a crazy EV tax incentive. So there's a federal $7,500, which a lot of people think is kind of like a tax rebate. It used to be that, but not anymore. Now you just get it right off the cost of the car, whether you're leasing it or whether you're buying it. And then in Colorado, on top of that, dude, we have a $5,000 state credit, so $12,500 off the cost of any new EV.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is incredible. Anyway, so and we'll talk about how that applies to the free car in a second. Anyway, so Case was looking around for something, and he found this really cool Fiat 500e, which is a really fun little city car. We reviewed it. The problem is it's way too expensive, right? It's $34,000.
Yeah, and it's very limited on the range.
150 miles. Yeah, and so Case was able to lease that car for how much a month?
I think he's paying like $47 a month, which is pretty good for any new car, considering, you know, you're essentially driving a $34,000 car around for 2 years for $40 a month is pretty nuts. And I think he had about $900 down.
Yeah. So Grant, our ad sales guys, this is about 2 weeks ago, was poking around on the internet on Wednesday night. And he stumbled across this incredible deal on a Fiat 500e at the only Denver Fiat dealership, where basically all you pay are the taxes. And so he called him up that night, and they had just put it up. They had just gotten the okay. This is on a Wednesday night to be able to do this. And so Thursday, he hustled his butt into the dealership, and he was able to lease a car for nothing down and nothing per month, except for the taxes, which you have to pay on any car you lease or buy. And as we were driving back from, I think, a shoot, I called Grant, and he like dropped this news on me, right? And he said, yeah, I got this car for free, basically. And I said, Tommy, are you interested? And you said,
sure.
And then you were more than interested, because you also picked up the phone and called who?
Yeah, so I called Larry H. Miller, and we got a deal. And then I also contacted my wife and her dad, so my father-in-law, and they were also interested, because it seemed like a deal that was too irresistible to pass up. $0 down, $0 per month, just pay the taxes. And then on Friday, so this is now basically a day and a half after that lease deal was approved by Stellantis Financial, we make our way down to the local dealers. There's a couple in Denver. There's a couple Fiat dealers.
But this one was Larry H. Miller, right?
I think the other one's also Larry H. Miller.
Oh, okay.
And then we were able to, you know, talk to the salesman. They had like 20 of them on the lot, and we were able to pick one up. And we'll talk about the deal and how that process went, because it was not quite as simple as like the headline will make you believe. And I'm still like a little sketched out about the process, and we'll talk about that as well. But yeah, it's true. I paid personally $1,270, I think it was, to leave the dealership with a Fiat 500e. And then if all goes well, it should be $0 a month, no extra money down. And then there's going to be a fee to give the car back of $395 in 27 months. So it's a 10,000 miles a month lease, 10,000 miles a year lease for 27 months.
I remember not that long ago in California, they had this crazy lease on the smart electric car. And I think it was like $99 a month. I think they did the same deal on the Fiat 500e back then. I thought to myself, if I lived in California, I would jump on that. And lo and behold, now in Colorado, we basically got a deal that's better. And look, out there, I think a lot of people are saying there's no such thing as a free lunch. And I agree, because this is, of course, subsidized by the taxpayers. You guys are exactly right. But my kind of feeling on that is, if the government is giving away free cars, why wouldn't you get one?
And you get either a free level 2 charger or $600 in charging credits. So essentially, and you get to keep that charger. We everybody opts for the level 2 charger. You're getting a free $600 charger for free that you get to keep even after you get the car, you return the car back.
So how does this work, Tommy? I mean, how were you able to do this, and how is Stellantis able to do this? Because at some point, you would think that the company is losing money by doing this, you know, basically free lease, because all you're paying are just the state taxes and the federal taxes, which you're going to have to pay anyway.
That's a great question. And I do have some pictures here of the documents, because there is some interesting things I want to talk about.
Okay.
So the residuals on the car, at the end of the term lease, you have an option to purchase your vehicle. This is per my purchase contract. And the option to purchase that price is $17,388.45. So if in 27 months we want to buy the car out, it's going to be about 17 grand, which is crazy, right? That would be pretty silly to buy that car out for that kind of money.
Is this going to be worth less?
Yes.
At the rate that EVs depreciate, it's probably going to be worth a lot less.
Exactly right. But then if you look at like my contract, it's pretty funny. Like it says, monthly payments or single payment. Your first monthly payment is NA, followed by NA payments of NA due on NA of each month. And then it says at the bottom, your single payment of $661.77 is due on 12/13 when I took delivery. That and my taxes, even though this is where I get a little sketched out about it. It does say it's broken down as $661 being my first month's payment.
Yeah.
I didn't pay him $661 for payment. I paid him $1,200 for taxes. This is why I was kind of sketched out about the deal, because they did a really bad job explaining line item by line item, how it was being broken down. And I didn't do my due diligence. I should have pushed them harder to understand better, to know exactly for the story, what each line item was. But with these leases, there's so many different line items here.
I was going to say that you got to be like a doctorate of lease law to understand the way a lease works, right? This is not a simple process. But I don't think that there's anything sketchy here, Tommy. I know you're a little sketched out, but I don't think there's anything sketchy. I think that there's a win-win here for everyone. So let's explain the win-wins here, right? The first win is you get a very you get a great, good car that I think at $25,000 people would buy. At $34,000 people aren't going to buy. Grant said, that every time he gets in his car, he gets a huge smile on his face because he's basically driving a car that he got for free, which is also a perk. But the win there is that you get this free car. But let's explain the other wins.
And hang on. Yeah. The one thing I do understand is in the section where it explains the lease,
yeah,
the rebates and cash credits are $16,100.
Okay.
So that is how, that right there is how this deal is able to happen, right? Is between federal, state, and also incentives by Stellantis to get these things out the door. Is that $16,100 they're essentially giving you toward the price of this lease. Take that away from the MSRP. Anyway, so
So when we bought the Leaf, right, the dealer charged us like a $500 acquisition fee.
Leased the Leaf.
Yeah, leased the Leaf. Sorry. Yes. So he charged us this acquisition fee, which is just $500.
$699.
Okay. $699, $700 that just went right to the dealer's pocket. Mm-hmm. In this case, there is no acquisition fee or title fee or any of those other fees. That these kind of, I call them bullshit fees because they're basically just paperwork fees that the dealers add on to make extra money. None of that is there. So what does the dealer get out of it?
Well, the dealer gets basically coupons from Stellantis.
Yes.
And there's a couple of valuable things for the dealer here. First of all, the more Fiat 500Es that they move out the door, the more likely they are to be allocated cars and trucks that will make the money, Ram 2500s.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
You know, Dodge Durango Hellcats and SRTs and these high-dollar cars that have big margins on them. Now, the reason that the manufacturer is incentivized to get these cars out the door is so they don't have to pay for carbon credits. Especially Stellantis has had a long history of essentially buying insane amounts, spending huge amounts of money in order to be able to sell cars in states like California.
Yeah, so it's basically kept Tesla afloat.
Yeah, exactly right. They're buying these credits from manufacturers like Tesla so they can keep selling Hellcats.
So there's this kind of barter system where if you sell cars like Hellcats that create a lot of carbon, right, you have to offset that by basically either selling cars that don't create any carbon, like electric cars, or buying those credits from companies that only sell electric cars like Tesla. So for a long time, Tesla would sell its carbon credits to Stellantis, allowing Stellantis to sell Hellcats without having to, you know, pay the penalty. But the penalty to them was they had to buy carbon credits from Tesla. So that's what the manufacturer gets out of it. I also think the manufacturer gets that, not the $16,000, but they get that $12,500 from the state and apply it to the lease. So that money, instead of going into your pocket, is going into the manufacturer's pocket, and your benefit is that you get the car.
Yeah, I think
for not any monthly payment.
I don't fully understand that because it has changed so much over the last couple of years, and I should understand it. And of course, the great thing too about leasing is these cars wouldn't apply for the tax credit if you bought them.
Yeah,
because they aren't made in the U.S. They're made in Italy, right?
But there's a loophole.
But there's a loophole where if you lease them, they do apply for the credits. But what I ended up with is a car. Like I said, I still feel a little sketchy about it, that I paid $1,200 out the door for 2 years, 27 months actually, 10,000 miles a year. It's got temporary license plates on it, so I'm going to have to pay some more money at the DMV when I have to go get registration.
Yeah, but you're going to have to do that with the car you bought anyway.
Yeah, but that's probably going to be pretty expensive. That's probably going to be $400, $500, $600.
Yeah, but that's part of any car.
Yeah, but
In Colorado,
a used car is going to be a lot cheaper than that.
But that's in Colorado.
That's in Colorado.
Like where I grew up in Illinois, license plates back then were $75, whether the car was a Bugatti Veyron or a clapped out Honda Civic.
Sure.
In Colorado, we have this regressive tax where, and I disagree with it, where you pay a lot more for a new car than you do for plates than you do for an old car. And why I hate this regressive tax, and I think it's silly, is because it incentivizes people to hold on to old, crappy, polluting cars because it's so much more expensive to get plates for a new vehicle. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Tommy, this is kind of, I think the question that people out there are looking at is, what's it like to live with this car? If the government's giving away free money, and I know a lot of you are out there going to say there's no such thing as free money. I completely agree. There's no such thing as free money. But in this case, it is pretty much free money to you, at least. So obviously, the taxpayer is paying for it. But why not take advantage of it? Anybody could take advantage of it. There's no income tax cap or
minimum. Too many politics. Just let's keep going.
But you see what I'm saying?
Too much politics,
yeah, yeah,
Ned.
Yeah, yeah. But do you enjoy? Do you enjoy driving it? Do you like it?
I do like it quite a lot. Yeah, it's been a really fun little car.
Okay.
I think that it's pretty zippy. I think that it's really easy to drive. It's got good technology. It's got this big Uconnect screen that's got wireless Apple CarPlay. Use that. It's got an app that works more or less that you can use to like heat up the car, which is really cool. You can track the car. You can unlock the car from the app. It's really a fun little car. It's not – the thing is it's kind of It's cheap to run because you can charge it,
yeah,
which is going to, you know, save money in gasoline.
And you have an at-home charger.
Yes. Already,
so that's a lot easier.
Which is a must for this car.
Okay.
It's an absolute must. Like if you have to rely on public infrastructure, this car would be awful because the battery is tiny and it doesn't charge very quickly. But if you have a place to charge it up at home, it makes perfect sense if you're not driving more than 150 miles in a day, which very few people are. The part that does get expensive on the free car is insurance.
Yeah.
So you have to have a full comprehensive coverage.
Yeah.
And
the lease requires it.
Yeah. Even though I don't have any accidents on my history, I've had no speeding tickets, I still pay about $180 a month, which is roughly what the company pays, by the way, to lease that Leaf, about $150 to $180. And I called about a Leaf that would also be about $150 a month in Colorado to insure. So, you know, there are some fees involved here, right? 180 yeah. times 27.
And let's face it, this is a city car, so it's a tiny car, and it's only got two doors. So if you're comparing it to the Leaf, there are a lot of differences between the two. Obviously, this is a two-door, the Leaf is a four-door, so if you need to put more people into it, the Leaf is much more comfortable. But this does have kind of the better technology, right? The batteries are actually climate-controlled.
Yeah.
The Leaf doesn't have climate-controlled batteries.
It's got CCS charging instead of CHAdeMO.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just an insurance over those 27 yep. months.
Yeah, but you're going to have to pay that anyway on any car.
Well, but not $180.
All right, how much are you paying on your old LR3?
It's like $80 a month.
Yeah.
You know, so it's quite a bit more.
Yeah, but then if you're going to do the math, how much in gas would you pay to do that same commute? Actually, your lovely wife would pay to do the same commute versus electricity, right?
Yeah.
So even though you're paying more in insurance, you're paying a lot less in energy.
Yeah, I mean, it's about $200 a month in gas that she was spending.
Yeah.
Maybe $150, depending on gas prices.
But now you're charging up at night where it's probably like 12 cents a kilowatt.
Hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a lot cheaper for sure.
So I don't know. How many kilowatt hours are in the...
40.
So 12 times 40.
A full charge is going to be about $4.50. Yeah. So it's really, it's a very cheap car to run. And then, of course, there's no oil changes, right? There's hopefully going to be no maintenance. The car's covered under a full warranty, yep. which is really cool. So save some money there. But yeah, I mean, the insurance costs are what gets you on these lease deals.
All right. So not only did you get one, but you also happened to get one or help get one for your new father-in-law. How does he like it?
He likes it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much, I've heard.
Yeah. My mother-in-law says he drives it too fast because they're used to driving kind of older, slower internal combustion engines. And, you know, having that instant torque, even though it's only like 120 horsepower, it moves pretty fast. So he's, I guess, a public menace on the road.
Can you put it in what is that, the slower mode, like Sherpa mode or something?
Yeah, there is Sherpa mode, but then that limits you to 50 miles an hour.
Is there another mode?
There's a range mode, but that doesn't really slow you down either.
Can you kind of sneak it into range mode next time you see him to keep him from tearing up Colorado Springs with his new red 500E? This seems like a car that would attract tickets.
The problem I'm finding with those modes is that a lot of folks who have never owned an EV don't like one-pedal driving.
Ah, this is an issue.
So Morgan doesn't like one-pedal driving.
Yeah, how does she like it?
She likes it.
Yeah.
I haven't driven it at all. It's been only her. She's been driving it. I'm kind of my concern actually is that we're going to run out of miles.
You are going to run out of miles.
Because we've only owned it for like 2 weeks and it already has 500 miles because she's got a pretty long commute. And miles are another 30 cents per mile overage.
So my question is, what happens if you do run out of miles? With the Leaf, you can buy more miles. Nissan does that.
Well, you can on this, but it's 30 cents a mile.
I think the Leaf is much cheaper than that.
It's 10 cents a mile.
Oh, yeah. So do you just park it at that point?
Well, I'd like to just give it back to them.
I don't know.
I don't know if they will allow.
Let us know in the comments, yeah.
Like on a normal lease, they wouldn't be incentivized to do that because you're paying a monthly. But if I'm not paying a monthly, I don't know why they wouldn't just want the car back.
Hey, for those of you who've kind of run out of miles early on the lease, let us know in the comments below. What do you do? Can you give it back early and be done with it and then move on? Or do you have to hold on to it for the full term of the lease? That's an interesting question.
Now, there are two catches to this deal, of course, in that you have to live in Colorado.
Yeah.
So you can't just buy the car in Colorado. You have to file taxes in the state of Colorado.
I was listening to a podcast, Doug's podcast, and they were talking about this, and they were all saying that they would get it like without even thinking about it, even if they didn't need it, because then you'd have a car just to run around in. But unfortunately, guys, you got to have a Colorado address. And in fact, they made you show proof, right?
Yes.
And it wasn't just a license. You had to prove, like, you had to, like, show your garbage bill or something?
No, the problem was is that my new Colorado address isn't on my ID.
Okay.
So I had to find other proof of ID or other proof of address.
Okay.
So, yes, you have to file taxes in Colorado. You can't just fly it in and then drive it home, even though that would be awesome. You also have to have a credit score over 700. And in the video, I said I had a hard time with my credit score, and I should have clarified. My credit score is actually pretty good. It's about 800, which is well over the 700 minimum.
Yeah.
The problem is, according to the bank, the Stellantis financial organization, I didn't have enough credit history. So even though I've had a credit card for 8 years, I've never leased a car before. I've never had a car payment before.
So you had to have a co-signer?
Yep. So I had to have a co-signer.
Who was?
Morgan, my wife, is my co-signer because she has financed a car. Yep.
Yeah.
So I had to go through that process. That was a really long process. Getting approval took a couple of hours.
Dude, you were there the whole day.
Yeah, and I read like a lot of the comments and people are like, you shouldn't complain about being there for a whole day to lease a free car. And I understand that. My frustration was just like I've seen how dealerships operate, and I've taken actually dealership my course so I could become a dealer so I could have a better understanding of how that works, right? And
by the way, we are not dealers.
We are not dealers, but I did take my class, so we could be if we wanted to. Okay. But the class was interesting because you learn about how dealerships operate.
Yeah.
And it just was frustrating seeing like all the inefficiencies in this process and just the sheer amount of time it took, and then the paperwork had to be fixed and then redone, and they had to send someone out.
I think you put your finger on something. I think this is where Tesla has a huge advantage, right? Because every time we've bought Teslas, you could just go on the website and you provide them with a bunch of information, a credit card, and then you go on the app and then you basically do all the paperwork on the app, and then you show up at the delivery center and the car is waiting there for you. You sign a piece of paper and off you go. This literally took the whole day.
You say that, but our last Model 3 delivery took like 2 hours. It was a pretty long process too. Remember that when we took delivery of the Model Y, you were getting really frustrated because we had all the paperwork filed already and there were still big delays.
Yeah, but like with the Cybertruck, that literally took, I think, from beginning to end, like 20 minutes. Mm.
And then the other concern I have with this car is apparently it's taking people a long time to actually get their little registration ticket to bring to the DMV.
Yeah.
So when I was there, someone came in frustrated because they hadn't received their
Tesla too.
Yeah, they hadn't received their ticket. So I think that's probably more of a state thing moving slowly. But the process was really long. I mean, I think I was in there for 3.5 to 4 hours trying to get this deal done.
Oh, you were in there longer than that. You got there like you left work here at like 9:30 and you got there like at 10:30 and you weren't done. You didn't get back here until like 5:30. That's an hour commute from here to the dealership. So you were there a good 5-6 hours, Tommy.
Yeah, it was a really long time.
And this is another thing that I understand that, like, you know, this is a crazy good deal, but I don't think this would have been all that different had you been leasing a Ram 2500.
No.
I think it would have still been this stupid ass painful process. And I just feel like our system's broken. I remember I was listening to a Consumer Report podcast, right? And they were talking about what you need to go and do when you go buy or lease a car. And it was like going to war, right? You have to have your information. You have to know, you know, about the vehicle because the salesman's certainly not going to know about it. You have to know how much the actual MSRP is minus, you know, whatever incentives there are. And then you have to be like willing to walk away. And I'm like, dude, this is like going to war, right? It should be like this. You should just be able to go into a dealership and have a wonderful experience. Like you're buying something that you've been really looking forward to and you really love, and now you finally have the money, you finally earn the credit, whatever it is, to be able to go do it. And this should be just like one of the happiest days of your life, and it just becomes this drudgery that people hate.
To the dealer's credit, I will give them some credit. They were very friendly,
yeah,
which was good. They didn't try to upcharge me or
that's good.
My father-in-law or anything, so there was like they weren't trying to put floor mats or weather protection or none of that. That was really refreshing to see. And then, like, to their credit too, they didn't have any, at least so far, they didn't have any dealer handling on the car, which is also pretty cool. So it was a long process, but the people were friendly, and actually the car turned out pretty good, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, so the reason I want to talk about this, I was kind of bummed out because we kind of broke the story. In fact, we bought, in our company, we bought four of these, right?
At least
four of these. You got one, Grant got one.
Case got one.
Case got one, and Case's roommate got one.
Yeah, and then Case's friend is also trying to get one. They actually, when we went in, they only had the red ones ready, but they also have white and black as well if you want some colors.
Yeah, but now I hear they've got like a 60-person waiting list.
Yes, our video kind of helped them out. I guess like the first couple of days, they got an 80-person wait list trying to get these cars, which makes sense because the deal is pretty irresistible.
So I was bummed out for two reasons. First of all, I was really happy for you and all the people who got them. But I was bummed out because we kind of broke that story. And then all of a sudden, it kind of, you know, I'm getting a car for free is a great headline. And so it went national. And yet very few people actually gave TFL credit, right? It just came out of nowhere. Like somehow the reporters who did this didn't actually or couldn't actually bother to say, hey, I was watching this TFL video or the guys at TFL. And I always feel that's kind of where we're always at. We're kind of the nerdy guys. You know, in this car world, I've been doing a lot of listening to a lot of other car podcasts, you know, and a lot of the YouTubers who are kind of, I'm going to say the cool kids in town. And the reason I think they're the cool kids in town is because the cars they own, right? So like if you own, and you know what these guys own, if you own a Bugatti Veyron or you own a Carrera GT or you own a Lamborghini Countach, right? These are the cool kid cars. The nerdy kid cars are, we own two Model Ts and a Model A, right? And so sometimes I kind of feel like as the nerdy guys in town, we don't get a lot of the credit for kind of the fun stuff that we're doing. Anyway, enough of my, I'll get off my little rant. So let's keep going and let's talk about the next car that we leased and the experience that we had with that, which was completely different from yours, and that was the ID Buzz.
Well, we didn't lease that one.
Bought.
We actually bought that one.
Yeah. Next car we bought. Yep.
Yeah. So we've had that now for about a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And you actually took delivery of that on the East Coast dealership in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. It was a Garnet Volkswagen in Reading, Pennsylvania.
And that was the complete opposite experience.
This is what I'm talking about. Steve, the sales manager there, was an absolute dream to work with. The reason I say that is because not only did the actual process of buying it take about 22 seconds, or only as fast or as long as it took me to sign the paperwork, but after it was done, they actually got cheesesteaks for us. And I know that is part of the fact that we're TFL, and so they're kind of giving a special treatment. But still, I thought to myself, this is the way to buy a car. And then, of course, I have to thank our friend Scott O'Sullivan, who is a personal injury attorney. Does a whole bunch of other stuff as well. He actually sponsored the video series. So thank you, Scott. And if you guys are looking for an attorney that helps you with personal injury or any other issues you might have when it comes to your car or your truck life, get a hold of him. He's great. Not only is he a friend, but he's helped us out a lot as well. So Scott, thank you for sponsoring that series. And let's talk about our experience with that, because my experience wasn't all that grand. Everybody knows that. I don't want to go into that again. But then when we got the car back, you actually took it and you've been driving it around. You've been using it to ferry people around. What's your experience with the ID Buzz?
Yeah, it's been really good. So, of course, it's too expensive. $69,000 is a lot of money for a minivan. And it kind of goes against the ethos that the Volkswagen Type 2 bus stood for, which was the affordable mass transportation that had all this personality. The good news is the new one does still have personality, which is great. It still holds a lot of people, and it has a lot of luxury that the old one never had, like massaging seats and a heated steering wheel and a huge panoramic sunroof. So you do get some value for your money. The range is a little bit too limited. It's about 231 miles on the EPA cycle. Real world, probably closer to like 220, 225, so pretty close to the actual number, but not quite there. But the car, if you have a place to charge it up at home and you're just using it for everyday around town commuting or maybe the occasional trip out of town, it's awesome. It works really well.
So I'm kind of torn because it's very expensive, right? $72,000 is a lot for any vehicle, let alone a minivan. And I know it starts at 60. And that's always going to be the rub. I mean, is the situation with the Volkswagen ID Buzz kind of like the Fiat 500, where at $34,000, it doesn't make sense, but at $25,000, it would make sense. Whereas with the ID Buzz at $72,000, it doesn't make sense, but maybe at $48,000, it would make sense. What do you think?
Yes.
Okay, fair. That was an easy answer.
No, I think that the van would be a perfect car at $50,000 or $48,000 or maybe even $55,000 would be pretty good value. But at $70,000, the value isn't there. Now, of course, you can get the more basic version, the rear-wheel drive one for $59,000 and some change, which is awesome. Realistically, $60,000, that's great. But I think that that should be closer to maybe like $45,000, and then the all-wheel drive one should be closer to $50,000. And then we're talking about some value. Or just come out with a standard hybrid version that starts at $40,000. I think that would be really, really popular. Because the problem is that the van has always been about seeing America and experiencing life on the road. It's tough to do that when you have 230 miles of range. So that's kind of the big shortfall of the van. The positive is it's a really cool, well-packaged machine. It's got a ton of space. It's got a ton of style, which is a hard thing to blend into one. Usually cars look cool or they're practical. Having both in one is really great.
You know what I love about it? It makes me happy. I don't know if you can put a number on that, but every time I look at it, and I think it's not just me, Tommy. Like, I was driving it the other day and I parked in front of my gym and these two women came down and they were like smiling. They were, you could tell they were just loving the thing. And I mean, what's the price for a vehicle that makes others smile? It's kind of the exact opposite of the Cybertruck. That one made other people very grumpy. This one just makes people happy because I think people have good memories of either being in one or because the styling is so out there, right? I mean, most cars today are white, black, gray. This thing is actually bright and vibrant and it just sticks out on the road. So I think that there is a number you could put on that. Is it 72? Probably not. But is it 60? Maybe.
Yeah. I think, at you know, like I said, 55 or 60, it would be really good. And I love that you can get cool colors in them, right? They're not just black, white, and gray. You can get the bright blues and the oranges and the reds and the yellows. So there's all sorts of vibrant colors. And it's like it's the first Volkswagen in a while that really has people talking. And that's a big deal, right? Volkswagen has been doing so many cars, I think, for years based on committee. Based on what the buying public indicates they want based on data. And then you end up with good cars like the Atlas and the Tiguan, but they're not exactly soulful because nobody is asking for this big expensive van. But that's what gets people excited. And I think in the short term, these cars are going to sell really well. What's going to happen in a year and a half? I'm not convinced that it's going to be able to maintain those high sales numbers at that price point, but at least for the next year, it's going to be the next
topic. I mean, what's the price of cool, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, but cool has a very limited shelf life.
Yeah.
I mean, Cybertrucks were going for $300 when they were new.
Yeah, you can't bottle cool.
And now they're going for $70, $75,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Or $85.
Or $85, yeah.
Which is what we got for ours when we traded it on the ID Buzz. The other thing I like about it, Tommy, is, I was afraid that the infotainment was just going to be a hot mess because Volkswagen has had issues with it. But actually, it works pretty well. It's kind of seamlessly integrates with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto wirelessly. And then once you're into the native system, it's not that hard to navigate.
It's not great.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, it's not great.
I think it's not horrible.
It does some good stuff. Like it has a lot of really good information about fast charging ability, optimization, which is really cool. I like that a lot. But if you have to use it as your main source of climate control and for audio and that kind of thing, it's not that good. It's you figure it out over time, but there are just some like really befuddling things that they do in there.
Yeah, but compared to, let's say, the latest version of BMW's iDrive, which is way too complicated, you know, with nested menus. And you can swipe left, you can swipe right, you can swipe up, down, all this stuff. It's just way too complicated. Whereas the Volkswagen system does have the big icons. So if you want to go like do climate control, there's a home button and then you hit climate. If you want to do, I don't know, navigation, you hit the little, you know, navigation arrow. It's not that difficult to understand, at least for me. And I'm not the greatest at this.
Climate control is easy because it's always in the same spot. That's really good. And it's permanently at the bottom, which was a big improvement over some of like the old ID4 systems. The problem is like if you want to navigate to your charging screens, right? They use kind of an OS looking app style home screen,
yep.
But it's across three different pages. So you spend a lot of time scrolling, trying to find the icon that fits your need for what you're trying to do. That's a little bit frustrating. The bigger problem, and we just drove the new Taos, which we'll talk about in a second, which has physical tactile buttons on the steering wheel.
And volume control.
And the ID Buzz has haptic buttons on the steering wheel.
Yeah, those things are horrible.
And like trying to get the cruise control set at 72 is almost impossible. Like if you're going, if you have it, if you have it at 60, 65,
I experienced that.
65, you push it up once it goes to 70, you push it up again, it goes to 75. So you start pushing it lighter, thinking you just need a light tap, it goes to 65, 60.
Well, I think the way it's supposed to work is the first time you hit it, it goes up 1 mile per hour. And then Volkswagen was very clever and they said, if you hit it twice, then we'll jump you up 5 miles per hour. But because those controls are so god darn awful to use, it's almost impossible to make that distinction.
And basically what you have to do is pick the speed with the, I figured out, you pick the speed with the accelerator pedal. So you drive up to the speed you want to do and then hit set and it'll hold that speed. But if you want to change the speed using the buttons, unless you want to go up by 5 or 10, it's very impossible. So that's really frustrating. But the rest of the car is pretty usable. It's got, you know, really comfortable captain's chairs on both front seats and the rear seats in our first edition all-wheel drive version. You sit super high.
It's a very tall car.
You sit at like Tahoe level, so you get a great view out of the world.
Yeah, and you got this big van windshield in the front, so it's like a panoramic view that's constantly changing as you're going down the highway. And actually, I drove it in the snow in a whiteout snowstorm. It's really good in the snow, even without snow tires.
I'm a little skeptical of that claim.
I'm not making that up, dude.
Yeah, but I don't like, they're eco tires.
I'm just telling you, it was very sure-footed.
We did discover a pretty big problem with it.
Tell me.
And that you can't get snow tires for it.
So yeah, we talked about that in the live video we did, and then somebody said in Europe they have them.
Sure, but that's not super helpful if you're in the U.S.
Well, it's because they're asymmetrical.
Yeah, and they need to be a really high load rating.
Which is weird. Why would you have an asymmetrical van wheel?
Well, the idea is like it's supposed to be rear-wheel drive biased, yeah, right? Yeah. And the rear-wheel drive one, it makes more sense. But it's a 265 in the rear, 235 in the front. But because of the load rating requirement, because it's so heavy – there's no tires currently for sale in the U.S. that will fit it from a snow tire standpoint, which is a pretty big problem.
I think it's coming.
I hope it's coming because I'd love to get some actual snow tires on it, especially for Colorado winters. So that's pretty a kind of a funny issue we're having.
Because it could be a fun snow car for you and your buddies.
Well, yeah, or for anybody out there, you know.
It's got a big – it comes with a roof rack, so you could throw a snowboard up there. Or a bunch of skis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be fun. I like it, Tommy. Overall, it makes me happy every time I drive it. And I know that's not a Consumer Reports kind of rating, when people are looking for reliability. But for me, that's an important criteria.
No, it's really good. I'm really pleased with it. Maybe I'm pleased because I didn't have to write that $70,000 check. But as a car, it's awesome. It's very smooth and quiet and comfortable. It's adaptive cruise control. It's excellent. The lane centering is excellent. The app works seamlessly every single time. The audio system is pretty good. It's just a great, comfortable, it'd be a perfect road tripper if it had 500 miles of range.
And if you guys are listening to this as a podcast on one of our podcast outlets, Spotify, Apple, whatever, then today we just did a review comparing it to the Kia Carnival, Tommy.
Yes.
Or actually, I should say the girls did Jen and Mary did a review comparing it. And those guys are just knocking it out of the ballpark with their reviews. I'm really happy that they're on staff. Tommy, I'm going to get a little grumpy here for a second. I've been reading the comments because we always read the comments because we figure the only way we're going to improve is by taking what you're saying on board. Not you. I don't listen to you. I mean you. I'm pointing to the camera. I'm kidding. And I always hate the comments where people are like, I hate that kid, get rid of him, meaning you, or Roman is just the worst, or the girls are just the worst. And guys, those mean-spirited kind of, passive-aggressive comments, I mean, the team is the team, and I'm very proud of the team. And so when you guys have, issues with any one of the individuals on this team, it kind of comes across to me like you have issues with everyone on the team. Those comments always make me sad. There's, to be fair, those are like one out of 100 because all the other comments are always like, love the team, love the people. We just put up a video on Christmas Day where Andre V8 swapped his Bajunca and we had David back and everybody was over the moon to see David again. If you want somebody and you love somebody on this team, you're more likely to get what you're looking for with sugar than with vinegar.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, should we keep going?
Yeah, most improved car of the year.
Yeah, back to the Volkswagen thing. But I think we were both really impressed with the Volkswagen Taos, which is their small all-wheel drive crossover.
Yeah.
Really a good little car now. It was probably worst in class because of the combination of the turbo engine and the dual clutch transmission. Was
it was like a bickering couple that could never be on the same page.
It was like me and you in a podcast. it would not accelerate away smoothly. It was so herky-jerky between that clutch slip and the turbo lag. It was really unpleasant to drive.
And now they fixed it.
Yeah, so now all of the Taos's, front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive, have a torque converter, 8-speed automatic, and it is actually a pretty good little car now.
Yeah, I was driving into Denver the other day, and I was zipping through traffic, loving it, because also when I had to go park it, the parking lot was chock-a-block, and there was one space that most American cars or trucks couldn't get into. Boom, I zipped right into it with that little tiny Taos.
15 more horsepower as well, or I think it's like 17 more. It's a little bit more. I think it went from 158 to 174, so it's got a little bit more power.
I mean, let's face it. The Taos was kind of the car, Tommy, that you would buy if you were a college, new college entrant, and your folks wouldn't buy you a Wrangler, right? The Taos was the one that you would get, or HRV or something. If that was the case, you weren't getting a great car. Now you're getting a really good car.
And actually pretty decent value. I know it's going to sound expensive, but the one we drove was an SE with all-wheel drive and the turbo engine, and it was about $31,000, which is a lot of money. But for that, you got a really nice set of heated seats, which weren't just some black leatherette thing. They actually had this kind of nice contrast to them. You had a wireless charger. You had Volkswagen's IQ drive, digital cluster, 8-inch screen. You got USB in the rear. I mean, it was really a well-equipped little car. There's very little I think I would want on top of that for $31,000. And then if you do want more, you can get the SEL, which gives you 19-inch wheels, the only car in its class, I think, with ventilated seats, which is awesome. You can get a big panoramic sunroof in it. So, like, really good value for what you get. And a pretty fun car to drive. They did a really nice job with it.
Yeah. I think Volkswagen is starting to get some of its mojo back. I was talking to Alex, our videographer, because right now we have the new Jetta. And he was saying, like, 10 years ago, Jettas and Golfs were everywhere. And now they seem to have completely disappeared. I mean, when's the last time you saw, like, a GLI or a GTI in the wild?
Well, the problem is they've been replaced with crossovers.
Yeah.
So they've not – I don't think that it's a Volkswagen problem. I think that they've all kind of disappeared in that, you know, Ford used to have the Focus and the Fiesta, and now they don't have those cars anymore, right?
But the Jetta's not a – I mean, so you're saying – are you saying hatchbacks were replaced by crossovers, or are you saying sedans were replaced by crossovers, or are you saying both hatchbacks and sedans?
Both. Yeah, everything was replaced by crossovers. Yeah.
Yeah, we live in such a boring world now, huh?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I know it's the hot thing on the car communities to hate on the crossovers, but for most people, they're kind of just better than sedans or hatchbacks. You sit taller. You have you get the sensation of safety, even if maybe you don't get a lot of improvement. They're better in the snow. They typically have all-wheel drive. It's easier to load things in and out of. It's easier to get in and out of. I mean, there's a lot of pros for non-car people.
Doug made a really good point in his podcast. He was talking about the Prelude and how, you know, coupes are dead, but now Honda's bringing back a coupe.
Yeah.
And he said basically, and he's right about this, he said that basically coupes have – the reason people bought coupes in the past was because they were sporty, right? And they had good handling. But now you can get that same amount of sportiness in a tall crossover because of technology. So once upon a time, if you wanted a funky, fast car, you wouldn't get, of course, a sedan. You get a coupe. But now you could do that in a crossover. And the example they used was like what brought that on was the BMW X6, right, where you have all the performance of a sports car with all the utility of a big
boxy car.
Yeah,
but you don't get
car.
The fun of driveness. I mean, performance standpoint, for sure, you definitely get, you know, some of these new M cars, X5, X6M are insanely fast. Even like an X3 with the turbo engine is insanely fast, but they're not like fun to drive like a Prelude might be.
And while we're on the subject of other podcasters, I was listening to him on Matt's show, and this really got me bummed out. I did some thinking about it. So Matt basically said, and Doug agreed with this, that if you're a YouTuber, you have to have a side hustle to make money nowadays because the YouTube views are going down. And I think they're right about that. And that's because, of course, everybody's now doing shorts more than they are the long-form videos. So in other words, like if you're Matt, you've got West Side, right, Storage. If you're Doug, you've got Cars and Bids. And so you have to have something else to make up for the lost revenue that you're losing on YouTube. And that scared me because we don't have a side hustle, right? We've always been just a pure media company. And so I was kind of thinking and stewing on that. And I thought to myself, You know, we're really crap at selling stuff, Tommy. We'd be really – to be fair, we tried in the past, but we'd be – you know, nobody buys our merch. And so I'm kind of happy just being a media company where we don't have a side hustle, because I think if you had to do it as a way to market or promote some other business, then it would become really kind of drudgery and onerous to have to do these videos, not because you love doing them, and I'm not saying that those guys don't love doing it, but because, you know, this is – the marketing arm of something else.
Well, I think it's – they don't want to be – and part of they probably do, but it's out of necessity.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they're doing it because they want
to. I mean, at some point, we're probably going to have to branch out to that, or we're going to go out of business.
Yeah, that's what got me sad.
If YouTube cuts their revenues, their CPMs by 50%, which they could, and we have no control over that, we're going to be out of business. So regardless of whether or not we love doing it, it kind of – probably is inevitable that we start looking into other diversifying outside of just that platform. Mm. So I think, I also love doing videos as they love doing videos, I'm
and
sure.
And podcasts and all the rest of it, you know?
Yeah, but
just
it's...
being a pure media company without having to...
I don't think you can do it anymore.
Without having to have to sell something or promote something that is outside of like your core business.
I don't think it's going to be sustainable.
We'll see. I mean... you know, one of the reasons we've been able to do this is because we have diversified with not just within YouTube, right? We have 8 channels, but outside of YouTube, but never outside of the media world. So, like, you know, our TikTok page is very strong. I think we got like 1.3 million followers there.
But it makes like $60 a month.
And now Facebook has become strong. So I'm hoping that it's good enough just to kind of, you know, put all your efforts and your eggs in being, you know, a very good media company as opposed to having to do something else. But it is worrisome.
I mean, it's getting harder and harder. Oh. Yeah. So I'm not convinced that it's going to be sustainable forever. So.
Then again, you know, I mean, it also, I guess it depends on kind of how the problem is. There's also, and we haven't really done this. And I think that's been one of the reasons we've been able to just focus on just making videos, right? There's been this one upmanship that has happened in YouTuber car community, right? So initially you would start by buying some really cool car that was like under $100,000. But now we have reached a pinnacle where car YouTubers are buying Bugatti Veyrons. So if you're going to buy a Veyron, right, then the kind of money that you needed to sustain a business where you're buying a Model T, which is $10,000, right, which is less than a tenth of the tax on that Veyron, is much different than when you're not doing that and when you're putting the money into cheaper alternatives, right? These like the Carrera GTs, all these crazy cars that a lot of YouTubers are getting are very expensive vehicles.
What's your point?
I'm just saying, you know, maybe one of the reasons you have to have a side hustle is because you're buying a Lamborghini Countach.
Yeah, but which came first? Hustle came first, not the car.
So you're saying the side hustle led to the Veyron?
Yeah.
Or the Countach.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, all right.
I think, yeah, I mean, Doug bought his Carrera GT after Cars and Big sold.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So, fair. So yeah, I mean, he was really successful and huge congratulations to him. And then he rewarded himself with that. Right. So, So that the side hustle kind of led to that. Yeah. I just don't think that going forward, it's going to be sustainable enough just to do videos. I think that with the way YouTube's going, there's going to have to be other revenue sources if we want to stay in business.
Or we're going to have to hope that the price of Model T's quadruples.
Yeah.
So we start making money.
There you go. Flipping Model T's.
versus what else we're doing. Hey, we haven't talked about this, but we got to talk about the Nissan Honda merger.
Yeah. Really interesting news, actually. You know, it's kind of no secret that Nissan has been struggling, right? So the question is, what does Nissan get out of it and what does Honda get out of it?
Well, I got two thoughts.
Okay.
First, I think a lot of this happened behind the scenes in Japan with the government involved, right? Because there's a lot of jobs at stake. So I think somebody in the Japanese government, and I think this is the way Japan works, and if I'm wrong, please feel free to correct me on this, but I think somebody in the Japanese government thought to themselves, we can't all of a sudden have one of our major employers go bankrupt. So hello, Honda. Hello, Toyota. Any of you guys interested in working with Nissan over here? And we can help you facilitate that and probably give you some pretty serious tax benefits if you decide to work with them.
Sure.
Now, from a Honda point of view, I think what Honda gets out of it is something that they're dearly lacking, and these are body-on-frame vehicles.
I don't think Honda wants that. Because Honda could have done that if they wanted to.
I mean, I mean, you can see right now with like the way that Honda is going with some of their more what used to be on-roady and now what are becoming off-roady cars is that they're actually going and trying to lean into kind of that.
Yeah, but they're specifically not doing body on frame.
But they don't have any body on frames, whereas Nissan has, you know, a lot of body on frame vehicles, right?
Well, two.
Well, they have the Frontier
and the Armada.
And the Armada. And in other places, they have the Patrol.
Which is an Armada.
But you see what I'm saying? Honda has none of that.
Yeah, I don't think Honda wants that. I think Honda probably gained a lot of manufacturing might. You know, they got Nissan has a huge manufacturing presence around the world.
Yeah.
Nissan also has more experience in the electrification world than Honda does, which is a, you know, potentially a big benefit to the company. They're getting a lot of really talented engineers. So I think that's probably what Honda's getting out of it is manufacturing ability, manufacturing efficiencies as well. And EV technology, I think that that's going to be big for Honda. And then Nissan hopefully will get, you know, the funding and the platform sharing and some of Honda's great engineers to help them help them stay alive.
So here's a question. Like 5 years ago, I was at an expo and I learned, I didn't know this, this is not well reported, that Honda and GM have been working on multiple generations of fuel cells.
Sure.
Right? Like they're like four generations into it.
Sure.
So the original one I saw, it was like, you know, I'm lifting my arm up like a small refrigerator. And yep. Then the next one became closer to like a dorm refrigerator and then a small dorm refrigerator. Where are those things? Why aren't we seeing either GM or Honda actually put out cars with those fuel cells? So maybe Honda does have fuel cell cars in Japan, but they certainly don't have them here.
Well, I think a lot of it is probably tech studies, don't you think? Like, is this a viable technology and having two manufacturers that can put less funding into it than one manufacturer doing it at all is certainly part of it. I think that they're probably doing some research into developing fuel cells for heavy duty applications, right? I don't think that the Honda tried the fuel cell in the US with the Clarity and, you know, fairly mixed results. But unless they came together and actually had a partnership to develop the infrastructure to support fuel cell vehicles, it's kind of like a pointless conversation, don't you kind of think?
You know, Tommy, I mean, we are living in a time when this is the most upheaval I think anybody has seen in the automotive world since, you know, the horse turned into the car. I think that's fair. And when you live in a time like that, everything should be on the table. Mm. Right? So, you know, you've got choices and you have to make those choices. You can keep doing what you've been doing, or you can kind of do what Toyota did, which is, you know, you created this really interesting hybrid technology and you triple down on that and you keep doing that. Or you go out there, which is what Hyundai and Toyota are doing with the fuel cell vehicles and try to make those work. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, you got to try everything. Yeah. I think doing what you've been doing is not going to work any longer. As much as, you know, the politics of this country seem to be going in the opposite direction, I still think worldwide the current state of technology is just not going to be good enough. People are not going to want, you know, the old stuff. They're going to want the new thing.
I don't think I agree with that, but I understand.
In America, I'm not saying. Right? Yeah. People still want Hemis, but in the rest of the world,
yeah, maybe
right. People are going to want the new best thing, and at some point, the new best thing is going to take over America as well. It may take longer, right? I mean, you've seen it. So I when I moved here from the Czech Republic, like Europe had these incredible coffees. I've said this before. When we came here, my mom was like, "Hey, I'd like a cappuccino." And back then, in the 70s, there was two kinds: there was black and there was decaf. And yet now, look at, you know, all the amounts of coffees, and it's gone the other way too, right? In Europe, everybody drove sedans, and then we became all crossover and SUV crazy, and now that same thing is happening in Europe. Mm-hmm. So this technology, but at some point, people kind of.
But in Europe, they're going crazy for EVs, and we haven't seen that trend at all.
Well, they're going crazy for cheap Chinese EVs, which we don't get.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you got a cheap EV. But
that, if I had to buy that, that'd be a $34,000 EV.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But if you could get yourself a $25,000 BYD, whatever, Seagull or whatever animal that thing is called, Seal, right?
Yeah.
Which we don't get, then you know, the people in Europe aren't buying the Chinese brands just because they're cheap, right? The Chinese are building relatively good, inexpensive electric cars, and that's why they're buying them. Kind of like the Japanese did when they came over and showed the Brits and the Americans that cars can not only be small but reliable. All right, let's keep going down our list now. we did something fun. We bought a BMW i8, and that car today, I think, is a bargain.
Yeah.
Right? We bought a 9-year-old one for, 10-year-old one for $48,000. Originally, it was like $148,000. Mm-hmm. And what made it cool back then still makes it cool today. And so with the i8 and the i3, BMW was way ahead, maybe too early. And that is, they had plug-in hybrids that you could drive for like 20 to 30 miles. And then when you used up the battery, the engine would turn on, and then you could drive it across country. I drove it from Anchorage with no issues. So is the i8 the next big thing? Were we too early, or is it still going to get cheaper?
The problem is the problem with the BMW i8 is because people perceive that car exactly like you said it.
Yep.
They think of it first as a plug-in hybrid, and they think of it, oh, it only goes 15 miles on a charge, and then, oh, it's got this little three-cylinder that turns on. And I think that that kind of rhetoric you're saying is very damaging to that car's persona. And it was the same rhetoric BMW used to try to sell it, which simply didn't work.
Okay, so what? How are you looking at it?
They should have marketed as a performance vehicle that have two powertrains that help achieve the most performance per gram. And what I mean by that is, if you look at it as a hybrid, or if you look at it as a gas car, it's a bad gas car. It's a bad hybrid because it's got a tiny engine and it's got a tiny battery. But if you look at it as a performance machine with the two powertrains working in unison, it actually makes a lot of sense. If you look at it as a benefit to the vehicle because it's all-wheel drive with a 129 horsepower front motor and then a rear motor generator in the back that powers the rear wheels that can achieve 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds, that's how they should have marketed it as. Like, and oh, by the way, it'll also do 35 mpg and it's the most daily drivable sports car on the road. 35,
try 60.
Well, but with the gas engine, like 35, right?
Right, but I'm getting 60.
Sure, because you're using electricity, right? Yeah. So I think the problem is people look at it as a hybrid first and a sports car second. And I think if BMW had marketed first as a sports car that has the benefit of all-wheel drive and the power that comes with instant torque from hybridization, it would have been good. Because people look at it and they say 357 horsepower for 150 grand. There is no value there. There is no power there. But in the real world, 0 to 60, 3.8 seconds, quarter mile, and 12.4, that's a lot of performance, right? Even by 2024 standards, I mean, it just demolished our V8 Mustang in a quarter mile. So it's not a slow car by any stretch of the imagination. But that hybrid thing and the plug-in hybrid thing is the thing that's always kind of kept it back. And I think if people have that mindset shift, as they're starting to do, especially because it's such a good design with such a good interior, that's what's going to help drive that car's value.
I mean, it was their moonshot back then, right, in 2014. And I think the materials and the quality of the construction, the fact that it's a carbon composite tub, I think all this, it's super light. I think a lot of that will eventually make their car highly collectible. They built only about 20,000 of them. So we had one of our viewers, listeners, call me. He called me and he's looking to buy one. And I said, don't get the convertible, get the coupe, because I like the rear seats because they're handy for putting more stuff in.
Sure, basically. Yeah, it's really useful.
Right. I don't necessarily want another convertible. So for me, the coupe was the way to go. But anyway, he called me like this week and he said he finally found one. He found a 2019. And by the end of the run, the last like 3,000 were mostly convertibles. So they were competing with the Porsche 911. So we got 2019, which is what, 5 years old, with 2,800 miles for like $78,000.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's pretty good.
And the 2019s had the bigger battery.
But the early ones, like one just sold on Cars and Bids, 37 grand.
Yeah,
for an early one with 80,000 miles.
I would highly recommend. Okay, so there's also, I was watching like i8 videos, and there's one that Frelhaus did, and they were doing one of their funny skits, and the guy like had to put a helmet on to get into the thing because obviously those scissor doors, you know, aren't easy to get into, and so like you have to have your helmet on so that when you hit your head, you know, and this is a convertible. This is not a problem you have with the non-convertible where you hit your head on the door. This is a convertible issue, but. You know, you shot that video with Mary, our new videographer, and when you guys came back, she said that she absolutely hated those doors.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I asked her, I said, like, how much are you willing to pay for style? Mm-hmm. Because that's what it's about, right?
Sure.
There was that funny Silicon Valley, I don't know if you guys watched it, right, where one of the characters in there is kind of like loud millionaire, billionaire, said he wants, and I'm doing this thing with my arms on, if you're listening to this, he wants car doors that go like this, right? And I'm lifting my arms up.
Right.
Versus, you know, like a wing where they open up like a regular car door.
Yeah. Well, he called them billionaire doors.
Billionaire doors, yeah. And I think that, to me, makes that car so much cooler. It is a pain in the ass to get in and out.
The problem is not the doors. The problem is that the seats are so tucked in within the
You got to fall into it.
Yeah,
then,
but
then once you're in it, you're in this like beautiful cocoon.
The in is fine, but then the out is the hard part.
Yeah, you kind of fall out of it too.
Even you love that car. Sometimes you don't want to take it to like go to the store.
Because the pain in the butt to get in
there. It's very hard to get in and out of that car.
Yeah.
I think that it is very cool. I'm glad that they did the doors. I agree with you on that. And I mean, the design is amazing. It still looks brand new. Ours is 11 years old almost, and it still looks brand new in 2025 now. I mean, it's unreal how good that car looks. Same thing with the interior, right? Lots of bespoke parts of that interior make it look so good. And actually, the big problem that everybody has with these cars too is they're really worried about reliability, because this came out at the same time that the Holy Trinity came out, which was the LaFerrari, the 918, and the P1. And now that those cars are also 10, 11 years old, P1s are having high rates of battery failure, and they're $250,000 to replace the battery. 918s
are – how many P1s do they build?
I think like – I want to say like 1,000 maybe.
Well, you use your phone so you don't
– it's not nearly as many.
Right. So they built 20,000 and I worried about too. You can get used i8 batteries because people have crashed them and then they're used ones, or you can get refurbished ones. So I think –
oh, 375. Yeah, a lot fewer of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think they built like 900 Porsche 918s, right?
So Google i8 battery.
I looked it up. It's $8,000 in the used market.
Yeah. It's not horrible. I mean, it's not $250,000. So I think it's BMW. It's a mainstream manufacturer.
Well,
and my car, our car, is 9 years old, and the battery still gets like 20 miles of all-electric range, and it's got 39,000 miles on it.
So
and the reason I think for that is it was a driver, actually.
Yeah.
It didn't sit.
A couple things too that certainly plays into it. But battery longevity in those i products has been really good. i3, same thing, are having really long lived batteries.
Yeah.
With very few failures. So the common failure points on i8s are AC impellers can explode, which will cause shrapnel to go through the AC loop, which is a problem because the battery is actually AC cooled. It's AC refrigerated.
Yeah.
And that can cause blockages, which can overheat the battery. That's bad news. Other problems are door struts, right? Little things like door struts are a common problem.
That was replaced. Oh, also the roof starts to delaminate.
Fuel pressure sensors. It's got a pressurized fuel system. Yeah. And when those fail, then you can't open up the fuel door without manually releasing it.
But you're not buying a supercar. You're still buying a BMW, which is what's great about it. You've got supercar looks at like BMW repair costs.
But what I'm going at is
is affordable.
No.
For a supercar,
but not – I mean, there's a couple things that are really stupid. Like if you want a 12-volt battery replacement, not the high voltage, the little battery.
12-volt, yeah.
You have to bring it to BMW because then they have to allegedly tell the car you have a new battery, that the program into the brain has a new battery so it doesn't try to charge it like a 3-year-old or 4-year-old 12-volt, which is stupid. But the cars, what I'm getting at that is that they're actually really reliable. From the research I've done, people have had very little issues with i8s over the years.
I mean,
and it's got a Mini Cooper engine, 3-cylinder turbo.
A lot of those out there.
Super easy to service. Spark plugs are easy. Oil changes are easy. The car is actually pretty easy to work on yourself, apparently, is what Franny from Heidi and Franny's Garage was telling me. So there's a lot of like good engineering in it that's not that impossible to fix. Motors haven't been failing on them. Engines haven't been failing. They've been really reliable. It's got two transmissions. Did you know that?
No.
It has a 2-speed automatic in the front.
Yeah, for the electric motor.
And then a 6-speed Eisen automatic in the back.
And they actually work together pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
All right, before we wrap this up, we're running out of time, Tommy. Let's talk about a last thing we want to talk about. Stellantis just announced that you can still buy a new Durango Hellcat.
Yeah, pretty cool. So they're continuing it through the 2025 model year, the Hemis and the Durangos. And the reason I want to talk about this is, does this mean that we're going to see V8s back in trucks and in muscle cars?
I think so.
I think you're right.
I think we are. I think with the new administration, I think they're going to open the door for the manufacturer to bring in supercharged Hemis and Chevy 350s, LSs, whatever mm-hmm. old V8 you loved. I think a lot of those are coming back.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I think there is a pent up lust for them.
Yeah, I think that people want those vehicles. I think that they're going to be really in demand going forward. So I think that there's a good chance, nothing official, of course, but we're going to see Hemis back under the hood of some of your favorite Stellantis products.
But I still think, like, for me, the car that I'm lusting after now, because I'm an early adopter. I love new technology and I love the i8. I want the new M5 Touring, because basically what the i8 pioneered, now the M5 Touring has perfected. And that is a plug-in hybrid with a lot more. According to the Europeans, at least, you get 50 miles of range.
Sure.
I could be wrong. Please correct me. I should probably Google it. What's the size of – I'll Google it.
It's like 25 kilowatt hours.
Yeah, I was going to say 27 kilowatt hour battery, which is actually a pretty good size battery. And of course, the Europeans are all saying that the price for that is that the car is heavy. But because of modern technology, you can make that heaviness disappear. And I guess if you're looking at a traditional M5, which was basically, you know, a car you could take to work and take your friends to dinner and impress, and then you could take to the track. But I don't think anybody's taking an M5 Touring, which is European speak for the wagon, to the track. So I think as the ultimate family pet hauler, and I'm about to get grilled for this, but I think at $125,000 all in, which is really what you get. There's no, like, you can't really configure it. You can pick colors.
Sure.
But there's a driver's performance package and maybe like different color options, but that's it. So for $125,000, I kind of feel like with today's world, it's actually relatively affordable. And I know $125,000 does not sound affordable.
Yeah, you're going to get grilled for that.
Yeah, but the YouTubers buying Countaches for, you know, $1 million.
But they are so out in the stratosphere that even being in Jupiter is still pretty far from Earth, you know. The problem, there's one fatal flaw with the M5.
Tell me.
Beside its weight. I love fast wagons. Right. V90, awesome wagon.
Right.
E63.
Hey, what's the fatal flaw?
It's hideous. It's really, really ugly.
I love the looks of it.
No, nobody likes the looks of it.
They got rid of the big beaver teeth.
Oh, it's just ugly.
Oh, come on, Tommy.
It's just...
That's good design. If you hate it initially... Then over, and BMW does this, right? A lot of their designs are cutting edge. And so the first time they come out, you're like, oh, this is horrible. And then 10 years from now, it just becomes a classic BMW design. I don't mind the design. I think the thing that's wrong with it, having driven it, is it's way too freaking complicated. There's like literally, there's probably 100 different parameter options and choices you could make in that car.
Well,
and it's just needlessly complicated. Needlessly complicated.
I disagree, Dad. I don't think that a lot of BMW's designs recently have aged well at all.
Okay, fair.
I think like maybe the E65 series looks good, but that is not an attractive car.
It's also a bad color you picked. Well, I don't think you can even get that color in the US.
It's just not, doesn't work. Yeah, there's too much going on. It's got no cohesion.
Do a red one, would you?
Yeah.
Do it in red.
It's fine from the back, but the front is just
big. M5
and that's what the i8 has going for it.
There it is, yeah.
No, that's no better.
Make it big.
No, that doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a rendering. That's not even the real car.
No, that's not the real car. What the hell did you pick up there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not.
I don't know if the other one was actually the real car either.
That was the real car.
The green one's a real car.
No, that was the real car too.
Okay. All right.
Well, here's another real car. Yeah.
Oh, that's sexy as you know.
It's just busy.
No, I love that.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
Everybody
for me.
Hated the big beaver teeth. Now they're gone. Now it's more of a traditional kidney grill.
It's still the size of Massachusetts.
No, it's not. It doesn't go all the way down to the bottom like the old ones.
Yeah, that does not work for me.
And the beaver teeth, I should say, the BMW kidney grills are now horizontal as opposed to vertical.
Why are there 27 triangles?
Because it's got a lot of intercoolers
on the grill. But why not?
I think it has like 1,500 intercoolers.
Maybe you should design it in such a way where it's elegantly included.
We should also talk about what you're getting for your 125, right? You're getting over 700 horsepower.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, but I can get that Rivian out.
Big ruddy V8.
That Rivian out there is 850. And
it's also 109.
106. It's cheaper than this, and it's a truck. Let's see what the... let's see.
Oh, come
on.
Is it
like 2.5 to 60? 3.5 seconds to 60. So a Model 3 performance will kill it in a straight line. Doesn't look very good. It weighs 6,000 pounds. It's just, I don't think it's it, Dad. I don't think they got this one right. I know it's the first time we're
Can
getting
Can you put four friends and a Bernese Mountain Dog into a Model 3 Performance?
No, but you could in a Rivian, which is faster than this by half a second.
You'd have to have the S.
What?
You'd have to have the R1S.
Yeah, which is faster by half a second.
Yeah.
This is a good-looking car. The RS6 Avant is a good-looking car.
I agree. It's a very good-looking car. It's also much more expensive. They're also a lot. I just drove one. They're like 150,000.
And so, it's faster.
No, I'm not sure.
3.3.
But it's not a plug-in hybrid.
Boy, I don't want that. 126 starting. It's the same price.
No, starting. You're never going to find one for
126 to 150.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be 150.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but that's
it's $25,000 more.
Yeah.
And less horsepower.
Let's see what the
and you can't price is. And you can't drive it around for 50 miles in all electric mode.
Sure. But that's why would I want a 7 horsepower can drive around in electric
mode? Because you can also take it and go canyon carving with it, which you can't do in that Rivian.
Yeah, but you can in the RS6.
And it's also going to be the coolest car on the block because here in Boulder, at least, our neighbor has a Rivian. The guy down the street has a Rivian. No one's going
to
have that.
Because no one wants to buy that because it's hideous.
Because this is the first time.
Because it's really ugly.
This is the first time the 5 Series Touring has ever come to America.
Yeah.
Right? I keep saying Touring, but it's the wagon. So you're also going to be the only kid on the block. And just like, you know, you pay for style with the VW ID. Buzz, you pay for exclusivity.
Oh, you're wrong. 0 to 16, about 3.2, which is faster than I said,
yeah.
25 miles of electric range.
Okay, yeah.
So not much. I just, that car doesn't do anything for me.
Well, 50 miles might have been the European cycle, right?
Yeah,
there.
I think it's too expensive. I think it's too ugly. I think it's too busy.
The interior is gorgeous. Look at that red interior.
Yeah, it doesn't do it. Right, well, folks, let us know what you think in the comment section below.
I'll let you know, Tommy, if they're leasing them,
yeah,
for taxes, I will be the first one.
I bet.
At the BMW dealership to get that lease.
I bet. Let us know what you guys think in the comments below.
Thanks, as always. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Ciao.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, oh.